Before we get started on this week's podcast, I do want to warn listeners that I'm going to use some PG-13 language. Not horrible, but adult language. So be forewarned if you are listening with a child in the car. Bad behavior. It seems to be a recurring theme lately with this podcast. Last week, in SourceCast episode 129, we discussed technology gurus, people who are emulated and held up for their technological prowess and for building awesome companies. Steve Jobs, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos. While I was editing last week's podcast, I saw another article about a technologically revered person, Linus Torvalds, who is the creator and originator of the Linux operating system. And Linus has a reputation for being, well, a dick. His defenses are, hey, I don't have time to be polite, I have stuff to do. But eventually it caught up with him, and he is now stepping back from the Linux project and from the kernel that he's developing to learn how to better interact with people. So since last week's podcast was more about the cult of personality around these tech gurus and how they can be difficult people yet succeed, this week's episode is less about the people and more about dealing with someone who may have a difficult personality, or you are trying to progress around someone who is difficult to work with. I'm Joey Lombardi, and this is SourceCast episode 130. The New Yorker did an article on this whole Linus Torvalds situation, and it was written by Noam Cohen. I'm going to start this off with a quote from the article. Linus replied that the stakes were too high to care about politeness. Faulty code can have cascading effects, requiring large amounts of work from other developers to correct. Speed and accuracy are paramount. The cursing happens for the "you're so blanking wrong that it's not even worth trying to make logical arguments about it, because you have no possible excuse case." And sometimes people surprise me and come back with valid excuses after all. My whole family died in a tragic freak accident, and my pony got cancer, and I was distracted. And then I might even tell them I'm sorry. No, not really. So here's a guy who created something that's very popular, something that a lot of people use even though you may not know you're using it. And frankly, even though he says that he's not, he sounds like a very burnt out person. So if you're someone working in a project that has a very similar boss or project leader, here are some methods for dealing with a potentially difficult boss. And so I can weave back and forth. I'm blending this advice from a couple of different sources. One, an article from themuse.com titled 10 Brilliant Tips for Dealing with a Difficult Boss. And then I'm also blending another article from Forbes.com by Ashley Stahl titled 7 Ways to Deal with a Difficult Boss. So I love this as a starting baseline. First, make sure that it is your boss that is the problem and not you. The Muse article says, before you try to fix your bad boss, make sure you're really dealing with one. Try to observe your manager or your project leader. Is this a recurring problem with everyone, or is this just something between you and them? Sometimes a difficult boss, it's not that they're mean or that they are aggressive towards you. It could be that they are not fit for a leadership role. And if that's the case, the Muse article suggests you acting as the leader. Step up. If you are knowledgeable and you can lead a group out of a difficult situation, step up and do so. In theory, over time, you could be recognized for that effort. You may have a situation where a boss is micromanaging you or expecting you to work an insane amount of hours. It's okay to set boundaries. I was actually reading another article, which is on my blog, in the News That You Can Use section, about a marketing professional who was getting the side eye for leaving the office early. But this marketing professional, she had negotiated when she switched to this job that she would work 9 to 5 hours, and she would absolutely provide 100%. But at the end of the day, at 5 o'clock, she's going home, because she needed a work-life balance, which is why she did this job switch in the first place. And as you're starting out in your career, you may not feel comfortable establishing boundaries, or you may work in a scenario or an environment where having those boundaries are frowned upon. For instance, Japan. Most office workers in Japan are known to stay late. They may be sitting around twiddling their thumbs, but they won't leave the office until their boss leaves. And it's also customary for these salarymen, for these office workers, to go out with their boss and have dinner and do karaoke and drink after hours as well. So it could be a very long day for these workers. And as a side effect, in Japan, some studies are attributing this work culture as directly tied to their population shrinkages. Because who has time to go home and make babies when you're working all day and singing karaoke with your boss? Boundaries. Boundaries. The Muse article also suggests staying one step ahead. And I wanted to call that one out because that has been a recurring theme in my own office life lately. I have seen mentors and leaders consistently say over the last few weeks, I'm trying to anticipate what my boss is going to ask of me. And that mindset should roll downhill. If your boss is trying to anticipate what their boss is asking for, you should subsequently anticipate what your boss is going to ask for to make the whole process go smoother. And there may be some people who say, well, an effective leader will communicate the things that they want from their employees. Truth. But developing the skill set to anticipate what your boss is going to ask for, well, that takes you to the next level. The Forbes article is a little more practical. Ashley Stahl recommends, first and foremost, assess the situation. As I said before, you may think your boss is the problem, but you really need to step back and say, did you do anything to damage this relationship to make your boss think that you are not trustworthy or that you need to be micromanaged? The article also recommends practicing empathy. What is your boss going through? What pressures are they experiencing from their management, from their bosses, for deliverables, for customers? They may be stressed out and they may be asking for more, but there might be a specific market or customer situation that's driving that behavior. If you are having a terrible time, almost every article that I've read about managing a difficult boss suggests not speaking to coworkers about this or passing rumors. It's okay to vent your frustrations, but do so with a trusted friend or family member and keep the dirty laundry out of work. And after all this advice, there could very well be a situation where it's not going to get better and you either have to leave the department or think about leaving your company. And for those of you that are thinking, well, the grass is always greener on the other side, the Muse article offers some advice on how to avoid a future bad boss. And I quote, have coffee or lunch with one or more staffers at the new company. Ostensibly, your purpose is to learn general information about the company and its culture. However, use this opportunity to discover as much about your potential boss as possible, without appearing creepy, of course. So I have to admit, while I do not condone Linus Torvalds' behavior and his general rudeness towards a group of people who are trying to build something awesome that the world benefits from, I have to admit that I empathize with that quote that I provided earlier. While it's not excusable, when you are under tight deadlines, when you are trying to deliver something, especially if it's something that you created and you have a sense of ownership on, I can see how he would take shortcuts in communicating with other people, lashing out and issuing profanities and trying to get things done. That is a surefire symptom of burnout. I'll use a personal example. When I started out in my career, I was fortunate enough to fall into a situation where I ended up inheriting a large operational group. And effectively, I was on call 24/7 for 3 years, and I was working well over 100 hours a week. It was a tremendous learning experience. I learned a lot, I got very good at my job, and I earned the respect of older, more established employees. However, when you are getting paged multiple times in the night, when you are getting less than 2 or 3 hours of sleep per night, I was sleeping underneath desks, that takes its toll. And at the end of that 2 or 3 year period, like Linus Torvald, I was a total asshole. People would call in the middle of the night asking simple questions, and I would rip their heads off. While my issue was more focused on being overworked and exhausted, I'm sure there were situations because of my dust-ups where my management and other coworkers had to cover for me and make excuses for my bad behavior. And that puts people into an awkward situation. Again, in my scenario, I realized that something had to change for my own health. Other people may not realize what's effectively happening to them and to their work environment. We talked about how to deal with a manager or a leader that's maybe difficult, but how do you give advice to a coworker or a peer? That's a slightly different situation. How do you deal with a coworker who's struggling or underperforming? I read several articles to extrapolate some common advice. And again, I'm going to rattle off some of the main sources that I'm using to provide this advice. Number one, there's an article from Fortune.com by Ann Fisher. Got a teammate who's slacking off? Here's what to do. TheCusp.com has an article on how to deal with an underperforming colleague by Vivian Egan. CareerBuilder.com gives some advice on how to deal with a clueless coworker, and that was provided by Robert Half Technology. And they all say effectively the same thing. First and foremost, do not immediately rat your coworker out to a boss. Try to get in front of the situation yourself somehow, which we'll get into, and have a talk with the coworker. When you do have the talk, all of the articles say you have to approach it unemotionally. Do not come at this person with anger or frustration because they will just clam up. And whatever you do, once you've had that talk, Once you've had that attempt at a resolution, you cannot get hung up on the past and what they did before. You have to focus on what happens next. That's kind of like a marriage. You can't keep bringing up old arguments because you're never going to progress. The Fortune article mentions an interesting fact that only 1 in 10 employees have confronted an underperforming coworker. The quote is that most people worry that bad things will happen if they say something, and they want to avoid conflict and unpleasantness. Most people just do the extra work and handle it themselves versus having the confrontation. But there's an adverse effect to that. Most people, when they're doing this extra work and they're handling this extra load, they eventually get fed up and then they explode. And then nobody looks good. People are angry, feelings are hurt, and if you explode, that could effectively backfire on you. So before you blow up, one thing that you should start to think about is that you may be influenced by biases that you're not even aware of. In particular, there's something called a halo horns bias, which is a type of confirmation bias where your overall impression of someone leads you to have a positive or negative opinion of their neutral attributes. It's really impossible for someone to be bad at every aspect of their job, but once you get worked up into this froth, it's easy for someone to fall into this bias feedback loop where you think that someone is doing everything wrong. So the key is to really focus on being helpful and providing positive feedback. Focus on improvement opportunities, how you can help someone move from spot A to spot B, and to progress and to get out of a particular hole. The intent here is to make an ally rather than an enemy. And sometimes that's hard because you're spending so much time with your coworkers, probably more time than your family, your wife, your friends. So sometimes it's hard to be professional when you're spending so much time with someone. But the Robert Haft article mentions that you're not just impacting the relationship between you and this individual coworker. When resentment starts to build, it can become apparent in your attitude and your work quality, and that can affect morale in the team or the project or the group. Like I said before, don't feed into the rumor mill, don't spread the negativity to coworkers, and keep it professional. You're probably saying, "That sounds great, Joey, but how do you do it?" One surefire way to help a struggling coworker is to provide clear instructions and to start documenting everything. You have to make sure that there's a paper trail because everything will devolve into he said, she said. And frankly, a paper trail is just a good idea in general. It's good to go back and reflect upon your notes and realize what you are committing to. Ultimately, there may come a time that even after all of the additional coaching, training, attempts at professionalism, the work's still not getting done. And if you're in a situation where that colleague is now dragging down the overall team's productivity, it's time to talk to the boss. To quote the Career Builder article, you may feel sorry for him or her, but you have to insist he or she find some way to work it out, most likely with some help from the boss. Fight the temptation to essentially say, "Okay, I'll keep doing your work for you." It's not fair to you for his or her personal situation to make your life harder. And if you're not careful, you'll put yourself in a bind that you'll never get out of. Ultimately, it's the job of leadership to deliver criticism and both positive and negative feedback. And it's the job of management to rectify issues that are happening within the team. And there are times where a coworker is not a fit for the position that they're in. And it's up to management to train, reassign, or to eliminate them. And if you're a mid-level or lower-level worker and you've had this conversation with your boss, after you've talked to them, there's not much more you can do to fix the situation at that point, and it's on them to deal with it. Many of these articles added this anecdote, which I found to be accurate and also highly amusing, and it's this idea of if you're in an office situation and you think that everyone you work with sucks, you might have to look at what the common denominator is, which could be you. If you have a problem with everyone, there's likely a good chance that maybe you need to realign your outlook on what your expectations are from your team and from yourself. These performance and conflict conversations, they're not pleasant. There's always a caveat. There's always some reason to do one action versus the other. You can see even from the information that I shared, one direction is basically to move somebody out of the way, get them eliminated. The other advice is to humanize and be professional and to get people trained up. And I think the variance in the advice is an allowance because every situation is different. It's almost impossible to have perpetual harmony in an office situation, especially if you don't have direct control over every aspect of who comes in and out of that office. And even if you do, it's still impossible. As a professional, when you walk inside of an office, you have to make a daily decision to say, "Yes, I know there might be someone I may not agree with, I may not like, but I'm going to find a way to move forward. I'm going to find a way to progress. I'm going to find a way to get done what needs to get done in a professional manner." I will tie that statement back to SourceCast episode 129, last week's episode. When you look at the Elon Musks, when you look at the Steve Jobs, the personality attributes that got them to a successful position, the nastiness, the comments, the bullying, that will help push things up a ladder. But that is not the same behavior pattern that will keep you at the top of the ladder. It takes a very different mindset to keep and maintain success. And I see both sides of that behavior pattern. It's easy to be aggressive when you're younger and you have less life experience. But life and a couple of really mean bosses are going to kick you in the teeth. And that's when you have to develop a different approach to interacting with people and to still get what you need. That, my friends, that's experience.
And that's all we have for this week. You can find SourceCast on iTunes, Google Music, and all of your favorite podcasting applications. SourceCast is recorded in bucolic Mandarin, New Jersey, and it's produced by my dad. The outro is performed by me, Ben Lombardi, and music is provided by Patrick Lee. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.